Welcome to the Fourth Age, a Wheel of Time podcast brought to you by DragonMount.com.
The Wheel of Time is an epic fantasy series created by Robert Jordan.
At its conclusion, the series will consist of 14 novels and one prequel novel.
Sadly, Robert Jordan did not live to see his work complete.
Brandon Sanderson, appointed by Mr. Jordan's widow, Harriet Rigney, will complete the series with the novels The Gathering Storm, Towers of Midnight, and A Memory of Light, based on the notes left by Mr. Jordan.
This podcast is dedicated to discussing and enjoying the monumental work of fiction that is The Wheel of Time.
Welcome, everyone, to another edition of The Fourth Age, a Wheel of Time podcast brought to you by DragonMount.com. I'm Virginia, and with me for this episode is Spencer.
Hi, everyone. Unfortunately, Andrew couldn't be with us this time because, well, he just started grad school, and so they're keeping him pretty darn busy. However, we do have a special guest with us tonight. We have the Tamerlan of Theoryland, Matt Hatch.
Yeah, I'm glad to be here. I'm glad you guys made time for what happens to be kind of the second. I think I came for Varen last time, and this topic is probably my favorite topic, so I'm glad to be here.
Well, we're glad to have you. Thanks for coming by. We really appreciate it. Again, we're sorry that Andrew couldn't make it, and Mark was going to try to join us, but apparently that didn't work out because he's not here yet. So we're just going to press on. You know, if we could enter Teleron Riad in the flesh, I'm sure it would be so much easier, but in the meantime, we'll make do with our cell phones. And
yes, we really enjoyed when he was able to join us for the Varen discussion, so much so that when he suggested to us that he could come on to talk about Teleron Riad and some of the other odd workings of the wheel, the mutual worlds and the parallel universes, portal stones, just all sorts of these other things that aren't the real world but are kind of that we see anyway. We jumped at the chance because we're like, yes, let's have a Theoryland master come and help us figure out, kind of sift through all the information we have about all these really confusing concepts.
Well, I don't know so much confusing, but fascinating for sure, and possibly a little mysterious. I like to think that I know a fair amount about the Wheel of Time, but I absolutely bow to you, Matt, and some of the people that post on Theoryland. I feel like I'm a novice white when I read some of the stuff, and I'm just going, oh, my God. These guys have got me beat 10 ways from Beltane.
This is definitely a topic I've obsessed over. There are a lot of topics that you could bring up that I'd have no. I mean, I went to the trivia at JordanCon, and the individual trivia, I think I got a lucky question. It was really funny. It was a really funny moment. They asked how many rods of Dominion were there, and you could see the anticipation on the people's faces out there. A lot of Theorylanders were like, "Oh my gosh, don't let them not get this answer right," because they saw me kind of pause for a second, and you know. As I answered it correctly, you could hear them kind of a collective sigh of relief out there, like, oh, phew, he didn't embarrass us. That's awesome. So there's a lot of stuff that I certainly don't know. This just happens to be one area that I've taken a lot of time to try to understand.
Well, we're glad that you're going to be able to share some of it with us, because I think it's one of the most interesting parts of the entire book series, you know, and yet, again, it's one of the ones that's probably the most shrouded in mystery. So I'm going to just, in a sense, turn it over to you and let you start off. What topic do you think would be the most interesting for you to tell us about?
Sure. To me, it's interesting to begin with just laying out in general terms what different worlds are and what we've learned about them. And what I'd like, you know, if you've heard something different or if you have a question, jump in and we'll kind of tear it apart. But what I thought we'd do is start with Teleron Riad and the comparison between Teleron Riad, parallel world, and mirror worlds, and begin there. There's information there that maybe a lot of people don't understand, and there's been some confusion because of the big white book, as I call it, as to what, you know, for example, where did the Shanchan animals come from and stuff like that. So just, I thought maybe if we just summarize a little bit, it might be useful to your listeners. So,
go for it.
Hetch is on edge, my lord. Other readers await Tarmon Gaidon. They seem to expect the light to triumph. They cannot understand the glory of the shadow.
The chosen dwindled, Mandrin. The weak fall away. I cannot save those who disregard splendor warnings. and I cannot step outside of time. Done by my ancient enemies, the podcasters of the Fourth Age. Would you unleash the spoilers in my service, Demandrin?
As you command, great lord, so shall I obey.
Then listen and serve. Hear who will die and who will live in chapters of books not yet released.
So obviously, I think everyone's familiar with the discussion that Varen has with Egwene about Teleronriad, and she mentions something really important there, which is, as she's describing in general terms, how Teleronriad and the world and there being other worlds that are run parallel to the real world, and there's others that run perpendicular to it. She describes the worlds that run parallel to the real world are the worlds that can be reached by portal stones. So that's an important, we'll jump to portal stones. And then she does mention something really important, which is Teleronriad is one of three constants across all of these worlds. So one thing a lot of people don't realize is, obviously, Teleronriad, there's a reflection of a mirror world. So Teleronriad exists as a connection between the real world, parallel worlds, and mirror worlds. And so the one of the interesting theories we've always played with is, if you knew it well enough, could you use Teleronriad to travel between all of the worlds? Could you gate into Teleronriad from a mirror world and then use the properties of travel from Teleronriad in one mirror world and go to a second mirror world through Teleronriad, then open a gateway and get back into that second mirror world?
That's an interesting question. I would have to say that it would probably be possible, but you would have to know enough about, at least for a woman, you'd have to know enough about the other mirror world to create some sort of congruity, I believe, between the two, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good point. You'd have to be very well read and study these worlds. If you consider the possibilities, you kind of look at why, in my mind, you get an idea of why Lanfear loves Teleronriad, why she wanted to be a master of it, because when you consider the one constant that they actually have access to, like they don't really have access to the creator. The Dark One, obviously through the Boar, they have some access to him, but the other constant that they all can, in essence, travel to if they can channel, that connects all of the universes, all of the other worlds is Teleronriad. And so it's a very kind of compelling concept to me that this place is, it's powerfully in the sense that it's connected to everything. But yeah, you're right. They would need the knowledge necessary to do some of the things we've talked about. You know, maybe somebody wouldn't have that knowledge. But what they would have is if they went to a mirror world through a portal stone but couldn't get back, in my mind, they could always use that pathway that we just talked about to get back to the real world, because they would know information enough to get back to the real world.
Yeah, I would think that would actually be the easiest thing to do would be to get back, because you do know your own dimension or world, if you will,
yeah,
pretty well.
And well, this led, if you read the Big White Book, unfortunately the Big White Book says something about, so I clarified this with Robert Jordan regarding portal stones and the difference between mirror worlds and parallel worlds, because it suggests that the Big White Book says that the animals that the Shanchan have were brought here from parallel worlds via portal stones. But Robert Jordan was pretty clear in a couple answers that he gave us that when I asked him, you know, to be specific, you know, are these places different? And he said mirror worlds and parallel worlds are different. And then he's very specific that portal stones only lead to mirror worlds. They don't lead to parallel worlds.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people have gotten that confused in the sense that a lot of people believe you could go to a mirror world and somehow bring back a bunch of Grom or something. Like the idea that a mirror world is just another real world somewhere. I think Luckers asked this question to Maria about whether or not the Egwenes of all of the other mirror worlds have souls and threads. And Maria, she said something to the effect of that she didn't know the answer to that question. I be of the belief that, no, all of those Egwenes of other worlds, they're not different souls. That's why they call them mirror worlds. They're not actual real worlds, real souls. However, we have parallel worlds, and I didn't know this. I was reading some stuff. I didn't realize that do you say Ogier? Is that, I'm not sure of the pronunciation. But the Ogier come from a parallel world. And the Finn world is also another parallel world. And those worlds do have souls and do have threads. And Robert Jordan is very specific that the Finns, they've existed as long as the wheel has existed. They do have souls. And so when you consider what the Big White Book says about animals from the Shanshan, that they know the Grom and the, I don't know how to pronounce it, the Tohraken, is that how you say it?
I always think of Tohraken, but I could be wrong. We forgot to ask Maria about that one.
That sounds more familiar to what I think I've heard. When the Big White Book says they came from parallel worlds, you know, the question becomes, you know, is it a parallel world? You know, is it the same world the Ogier came from? Is it a third parallel world that we know nothing about? But this idea that Teleron Riad connects them all, to me, is, again, kind of very, very compelling. And there's always kind of been that misunderstanding between parallel worlds and mirror worlds and, you know, and the reality of them. And one of the fun concepts that we came up with a long time ago was that the mirror worlds were a mechanism that the wheel would use to predict the future.
Mm-hmm.
By, in essence, its way, knowing the way it would use to weave the proper, you know, to know what threads to bring in and what talents to give certain souls and such, had a lot to do in our mind with the fact that it has all of these reflective worlds that have reflections of the future and the past and the present, and it's able to kind of guide the weave of the pattern according to kind of the data, if you will, that is generated from those other worlds. Kind of the worlds that Egwene and Rand see, you know, Rand, when he goes to Toman Head, is that how it's pronounced? Through the portal stone, he sees himself in many different lives. And obviously he never lived those, but in those lives, he doesn't turn out to be the dragon reborn. And, you know, he doesn't hear the call, or Moraine doesn't show up to get him, or he, you know, he ends up dying in the two rivers.
Yeah, he may be the dragon reborn, but he never realizes his potential.
Exactly. And there are reasons, you know, as they say, the mirror worlds are built on decisions that either were or were not made, in some cases, big decisions. And there are reasons why Ant never left.
Yeah, I actually think that the mirror worlds that he saw as he was going through the portal stone, he was indeed the dragon reborn in all of them, because as I remember, as he finished each little vignette of his life as it was in that mirror world, he heard a voice saying, "I want again, Luz Baron."
So yeah, less that he wasn't the dragon reborn, more, like you said, that he didn't fulfill his potential.
Yeah, he was submerged somehow.
Yeah, you know what this makes me think of is the test for accepted. The different worlds really that the initiates are subjected to as they're going through, and they have to almost consciously make the choice to choose the world that they're in over this mirror world.
Yep. Well,
I have to wonder what the heck Brankreel was made for.
Well, doesn't it say for what is, what was, and what will be? Aren't those the three steps?
Yeah. and it seems to me like what is what is currently at this point in time in another mirror world, if things had gone just a little bit different, and what was, obviously, what would have been.
Right.
I'm trying to think. I'm thinking of Egwene's mostly, because her first one was her and Rand were married in the Two Rivers, and then Rand went crazy, and because obviously he could channel. But then her second one, what was really weird, because he was in the rubble of Camelin. Rand was stuck in the rubble of Camelin, which I don't know.
Well,
I'm wondering what series of events would have led to that, especially when you contrast that to Nynaeve's what was, where she was back in the Two Rivers having to where they had the corrupt wisdom. I don't know. There's some interesting things going on with that Terrain Girl in and of itself.
Well, to your question as to what it was for, one of the things, one of the theories that either I've pushed or other people have pushed that I've read, at some point some of these theories just kind of, I sometimes grab a theory and it becomes mine after a couple of years somehow. So I can't remember if this is something that I postulated or somebody else threw out there, But the idea being that in the Age of Legends, such a device is kind of like your thrill ride, or you're going to get your, you know, your palm read. But it's the kind of Age of Legends equivalent where, you know, you sign a little form that says, you know, we can't be held accountable if you never come back. You know, you get to go here and you get to, you know, in essence, kind of see what your life could be like, you know, what it would have been like if you hadn't made certain choices. And it's kind of that, you know, I can imagine them coming up with a very commercial aspect to that Tehran Grail. And I'm not saying that, you know, it was sitting in a mall somewhere, but the idea that, you know, that it might have had drastically different applications at the time that it was created and then was used as something, as a teaching tool and as a, you know, as a training tool and as a testing tool by the Aes Sedai later on, to me, is very possible.
That immediately made me think of that movie that Schwarzenegger was in, Total Recall, where people would go and take vacations that they never actually took, but they'd have all the memories implanted and everything. I could sort of see them using the mirror world as some sort of an alternative entertainment. You know, hey, go on safari to some world that, you know, no one's ever seen before. You know, where you can hunt exotic animals like Gollum or whatever.
No, exactly. Yeah.
I had a different movie crossover. It made me think of the creepy castle in the first Scooby-Doo live action feature. and just imagining that sometime down the road, some society of highbrow magic casters or something, you know, the thinking themselves the elite, they decide to use it for training purposes.
Yeah.
The creepy funhouse becomes the train.
Well, we don't know if they've modified it to any of their purposes. You know, for example, they say,
yeah, that's true.
You only have three opportunities to come back to the doorway, and you know that they're obviously, there's an active weave going on, and it seems to me like they certainly, you know, kind of, you know, in a machine, how it's like, do you want, you know, I think of it as like a game you're playing. Do you want to play default, basic level, easy level? Or do you want to be the advanced user? You know, to me, like, depending on how you, what the active weave is you use and how you control this Tehran Grail, you can set up different rules by which it's controlled. So, you know, maybe the original rule was, you know, it's a time limit and then you're forced out. You know, maybe there was something more than a doorway. Maybe, you know, somebody comes in and actively chucks you out of the room. Who knows? You know, we don't know what the original use of it was, but it certainly has greater application than just testing Aes Sedai to become accepted. In fact, I would say that that's a really, really, you know, to me, I think the Age of Legends people would be insulted by the use.
So dangerous that I think any educational people in this day and age would be horrified, you know, the fact that you might actually lose somebody during the testing.
Right, they would have set up such harsh rules. Now, what's fun about this one, when you connect it to the mirror worlds, that's a really good connection, because if you look at some of the things that Egwene experiences and then you look at what Rand experiences a future or a past where he supposedly marries Egwene. And Egwene, you know, obviously we see more of what she went through than we see that what he did. But we know that he was going through a portal stone, and we know that these kind of alternate futures or past or present were things that he was experiencing going through mirror worlds. So there's a direct connection between that Tehran Grail and mirror worlds. And I believe Robert Jordan had an answer. I think someone asked him about the accepted testing. Oh, yeah, here it is. Aubrey asked him in 2005, during the raising tests for accepted and Aes Sedai, are the ladies taking the test actually inside of the world of dreams, she asked. And he said, no, well, I'm not going to say where they are for the tests for accepted. That might be a RAFO, probably not, but it might be. For the test for Aes Sedai, they're in effect inside what you might call an Uber virtual reality device, where what happens is entirely controlled, in this case by the sisters controlling the device. But it is a virtual reality that's so terrific that it is reality for you. You die, you are dead, no game over, start again, you're dead. But what's interesting is he doesn't say that for the accepted, and it seems directly connected to mirror worlds. Now, I would say this. I believe that there is some mix. I think it's either doing one of two things. It's creating, it's using, through the studies of the mirror worlds, they created something that used the pattern in the same way, or that was able to access the pattern in the same way and create a mirror world, but maybe kind of a temporary mirror world or something to that effect. But that certainly there's a connection between how they work. Now we know that Teleron Riad is also inside of this mirror world, and we know inside of Teleron Riad you can create people, and they'll act on their own, like those Trollocs, I think, that Egwene, was attacked by at one point. And so it's possible that there's some Teleron Riad / mirror world / mix with this Terangreal that's going on there, but certainly they're connected. I'm of the opinion that you can't bring something out of a mirror world just as you can't bring it out of Teleron Riad. Like you can't, or if you do, it's only viable for, kind of like Birgitte, and however you pronounce her name, when she came out and she kind of was fading until Elaine saves her. In that same way, I don't believe that the mirror worlds are real like the real world is. And Jordan was very specific, at least about Teleron Riad, that you couldn't bring anything out with you.
Yeah.
And I believe the mirror worlds kind of act in a similar way. And just a quick point back to Egwene's, what we see happen to Egwene in the accepted testing. As far as I recall, doesn't she have an injury there? And she comes out with that injury? And so there's that...
I know Nynaeve did. She came out with the thorns through her palms.
I thought Egwene...
Well, that was Nynaeve's was less... The thorns had...
Yeah,
the thorns had more come into her palms because of the channeling she was doing. It very much ties into the idea that she's thinking of a rose opening to the sun, but she's making sure it's a very thorny rose. So
she thinks of a blackthorn bush or something like that.
Yeah, she...
No, yeah. No, because they were perfectly centered on her palms.
Yeah.
I thought
she was scratched, but not just...
I thought there was a moment where she was scratched, but maybe... Nynaeve, but maybe I'm wrong.
Why is it that... Go ahead, Troy.
She might have been in her fight with Aghanor, but it's honestly been so long since I've read those portions of the story that I don't recall. However, I am going to look them up now, so continue discussing.
Well, that is actually one part that sort of drives me crazy, and I think I've sort of tangentially mentioned it on a couple of episodes. I would almost swear that Nynaeve was either channeling and or at least sensing the male half of Sidene, because it says several times that she not only could see his weaves and see his flows coming, but she was able to redirect them and then actually duplicate those feats herself. And I'm just wondering if Aghanor was perhaps using the true power, which I doubt, and Nynaeve was able to tap into that, or if she was actually doing something in that accepted test that she couldn't normally have in the real world. That's always confused me greatly.
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't think a direct question has ever been asked about Teleron Riad and channeling and whether or not the rules can be modified there in the sense of, for example, we've seen in Teleron Riad, you can make the world of Teleron Riad to the degree or to what you want it to be. In other words, if someone's doing something, you can say, like we saw Mokedion do,
right.
Tried to channel at her, and she kind of was able to use Teleron Riad to, prevent what they were doing or to stop it. In that same way, you could go along the lines that she was able to manipulate Teleron Riad to enable her to sense it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does.
She was able to sense it in the sense that she said, that she, controlled where her circumstances to the point where she made it be that she could tell what was going on. So
I could accept that.
Yeah, that's always kind of been my theory about the Arches, is that they're more based on more Teller. They're more Teleron Riad than mirror world, based on a couple of things. One is this: with Nynaeve, it really seems like she's creating the world in her mind, because she doesn't. She kind of knows that females shouldn't be able to detect men channeling, but she doesn't really know it yet. So she's able to, in my mind, is how I figure this. She's able to convince herself and tell Iran Riah that she can see him. And then the other is obviously when we have Egwene and the twisted ring Tarangriel, and there's the flicker and the accepted test that they haven't seen except when it's in close contact with a Tarangriel of a similar nature.
Yeah, no, that there's that connection. You could also go the Egwene and I say Gawn. Is it Gawain? I can't remember. I don't know.
I think Maria said Gawain.
Gawain. Yeah, Gawain.
Gawain, yeah.
So terrible that I have my own pronunciations.
Everybody has a problem. Don't feel... That's why we pinned Maria and Ellen down on pronunciations when we had them on.
Right. She's able to enter his dream of her. And if you recall, she's able to, for a moment, kind of separate herself. She's get into his dream as herself and still recognize that she's not the dream version of her, but she loses that and loses herself in his dream. In that same way, when they go into this world, they're able to remember, wait, I've become myself, my other self in this place, and I can still remember who I was, but sometimes they have problems and they forget and they start believing they are this person. So yeah, I think there's a mix of what's going on there. And that's why I think that Tarangriel was developed by individuals. If we asked this question, I'm certain maybe they wouldn't tell us. But if they did, it would be people that had studied mirror worlds and also people that had studied Tel Amarnad, and they took properties somehow and attuned this Tarangriel in such a way that it could get a scenario maybe from a mirror world of this individual that's entering their past, and then it could build a construct, a dream construct in Tel Amarnad that they would then enter and become. To me, that's kind of crazy that, you know, to put it all in those terms, but to me that's what's happening when they use that accepted test. It's kind of a mix of both, but constructed somehow by the Tarangriel.
One thing that is always, not always, but that puzzles me too, is that there is some congruency between Tel Amarnad and the real world. I mean, you can dream yourself into Tel Amarnad, you can make a gateway and actually physically go into Tel Amarnad. But what you can't bring anything out of Tel Amarnad. But at what point in time is it even possible for somebody that's such a massively powerful Tavirin or extremely powerful channeler to bend Tel Amarnad to their will to the point where the real world would start changing to match that? You think that's even possible?
I don't think it's possible, because I think Tel Amarnad will always be that its foundation is based off of the real world. That, you know, like, because I think people try to change things. I think they even have problems changing things and keeping them constant in Tel Amarnad versus attempting to somehow use Tel Amarnad to change the real world. It doesn't seem to me like that feedback. Now, we know the feedback goes that way from a body standpoint. You know, if you're in Tel Amarnad and you're injured,
yeah,
body can be injured. So there is some real world effect as far as the individual soul entering this place, and then there's a feedback mechanism through them to their body. But I don't know that there's some feedback mechanism to the rest of the world. I don't know. It's an interesting question. Could there be that the pattern's breaking down and that somehow Tel Amarnad can somehow affect the real world? I don't know.
That's what I'm wondering. If there's somebody powerful enough. I mean, we haven't seen that many, you know, super, super powerful Tavirin or channelers to really know, and of them, how many of them were actually, you know, how many of the Tavirin, I mean, Archer Hawkwind couldn't channel, but he was very strongly Tavirin. How many of them ever had the opportunity to go into Tel Amarnad? And so my crazy theory that I'm working up to on this is that Viren has said that Rand isn't going to be fighting the last battle the way he thinks he will be.
Right.
And if Tel Amarnad is basically overlaid across all of the parallel worlds, And as Viren said, there's only one Dark One and one Creator. And if it's bound in one, then he's bound in all. If he's freed in one, he's freed in all. And it only makes sense to me that somehow Rand is going to have to figure out how he can bring the battle with the Dark One, the last battle, into Telaronriad, because how else is he really going to be able to make sure that the Dark One is actually destroyed in every single world? I don't know.
No, I like that theory. I tend to, like, if you ask me about Varen's statement, I think her statement is, I think her paradox is bunk. I honestly don't believe that this idea that if she's freed in one world, he's freed in them all.
It doesn't make sense to me, but, you know, but then again, now we know that well, there's a spoiler warning, kiddos, if you haven't read The Gathering Storm, good heavens, why not? But now we know she could lie. And the other thing is, even if she believed it, but it wasn't true, she could still say it. So, yeah, I think you may be right, because that's never made sense to me.
I don't know. It seems to me, and this is just my own opinion, I don't necessarily have anything to back this up, but in my opinion, I envision the pattern as larger than just what we think. It seems like we have a tendency to think of the pattern, quote unquote, as what's happening in the world that we know, the world that we read in, you know, Randland, Shandar, Shara, you know, this area where our story takes place. But to me, it seems like the pattern is more made up of lots of these kind of worlds, where you have your parallel worlds laid out, and then weaving between them, in my mind, the mirror worlds, and that's what makes up the pattern. And that's what the Dark One is trying to destroy. So if the Dark One destroys the pattern, he's destroying all of the parallel worlds. And if he's locked out of the pattern, he's locked out of all the parallel worlds. And that's how I make it make sense in my mind.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with that one. If you can, there's only one Bor, and it's accessible through many worlds. So if you're able to go to one of those worlds, just like any other world, and you're able to seal off the Bor in one world, he's going to be sealed off from his access to those worlds and all. And if he's come out of the Bor into one world, he's come out, you know, he's out. So yeah, in that sense, I think what she said is true. I guess in my mind, he's only one, he's outside of it. So it seems kind of what she's saying is almost obvious. You know, if he escapes, he has escaped. If he hasn't escaped, he hasn't escaped yet. You know, he's not. So whether or not he's able to, whether or not there's somebody in a parallel world, you know, maybe in the Ogier world, there is a huge contingent of, you know, maybe there's 13 other Forsaken that we don't know anything about, and they're working to free him in another parallel world. I think that's a viable idea. I don't believe the mirror worlds play any role in that. I believe fervently that the mirror worlds are what they're. In essence, what we hear, they're reflections. They are reflections of the future, past, and present. They're constructs. They're controlled. They're not things that, you know, the inhabitants of these worlds can't come to the real world. In other words, let me give you this quick scenario. The portal stones that exist in other mirror worlds, they have the same exact symbols.
Mm-hmm.
So if Rand, in one world, decides he's going to travel to the real world or his world, and in a mirror world, he makes the same decision that mirror world Rand should show up in the real world, but he doesn't because he can't. But the idea that somehow mirror world Rands, like that 1,000 mirror world Rands can come into the real world, it's not going to happen. There's one dragon soul. There are not thousands that are somehow born into other worlds. But parallel worlds, I completely agree that they have. They're equally important. What's going on here, obviously, let's say the wheel put the dragon in this world. So, you know, this world happens to be very important. But I think the Dark One and his agents could certainly use other worlds, other parallel worlds, to build their armies and such and to try to free him in those worlds. And I think you're right. The idea that we're all focused on this one world may be wrong. And like Virginia said, maybe there is some idea that going into Telaronriad is a good place to attempt to, you know, maybe somehow you can use Teleronriad to battle the Dark One or somehow seal his presence. I don't know. I don't know where when it comes to Teleronriad, how much it touches the Dark One. We know that it doesn't. Mm-hmm. We know that it doesn't exist in the Blight, and so we know that there's
or Steadings,
or there's actually even a bubble-like Steading around Finnworld, or the Tower. I guess.
Yeah, the Tower of Genji. That makes me wonder. Going back to something that you postulated farther, like long time than the beginning of this podcast, was the idea that if you go into the mirror world and you know it, or not the mirror world, you go into Teleronriad and you know what you're doing, you can go into one of the parallel worlds. I wonder if that is what happens if you enter the Tower of Genji in Teleronriad. You go to Finland. You go to the Teleronriad of Finland. But if you're not there in the flesh, like Perrin wasn't when Hopper was there, if his soul goes to Finland and his body doesn't, he's pretty much dead.
Unless he can get back quick enough.
Yeah.
It just seemed to me that Teleronriad is one of the... Go ahead.
And I don't mean to insult all our Finnish listeners that Finland is a different place than Finland.
Well, one thing that he said is that Teleronriad doesn't exist in the Steadings or in Finland or whatever. I think it probably exists, but I think there are probably limitations around it that prevent people from entering it from Teleronriad, because I can't believe that if Teleronriad overlays all the worlds and the parallel worlds and is the, you know, the warp and the weave and everything else between them, that it wouldn't be able to exist in other places that have a reflection in the real world. There's just got to be some, you know, some way that it's created. And then the other thought that came across my mind was that, and this may be really obvious, since probably everybody and his brother has probably thought about this, but are the mirror worlds and or the parallel worlds, probably not the parallel worlds, but were the mirror worlds a creation of humans at some point in time? Because I remember this quote, and I can't remember who said it. It might have been, gosh, it could have even been Lanthyrus, Selene, or maybe it was Varen, that the worlds were created by those who knew the numbers of chaos or something like that. Are they a construct, like the ways?
The portal stones were created by those who knew the numbers of chaos.
Okay, So
the portal stones connect them, and what I imagine happened was someone, I don't know, I mean, some mathematician, I don't know. I don't know what it is, but they recognized somehow that there were other worlds. And, you know, obviously the portal stones are a construct that, you know, I don't know if you'd call them a Terangreal.
I was just going to ask, are they a Terangreal? Has it ever been asked? I don't know.
I mean, it makes sense. There's a certain, I thought they had to be powered by the One Power, and it's a device used to travel that is powered by the One Power. I mean, Terangreal-like, if it's not a Terangreal. We know it wasn't created by, it existed before the Age of Legends.
Yeah.
So maybe calling it a Terangreal is a misnomer, but it seems, you know, akin to a Terangreal. It's very limited when you consider it. We have mirror worlds for, you know, an infinite variation, and yet these only go to a finite quantity of worlds. So obviously it seems to me like they've found worlds that somehow they discovered were more constant, that weren't weakened and going to fall apart between, you know, one age to the next. That's mirror worlds, I believe. Going back to my theory, I believe mirror worlds are a part of the wheel that have a specific purpose, which is meant to be a mechanism by which, you know, the wheel, while we know it's not sentient, we're also told it's kind of the most advanced AI computer you can come up with. So it's not sentient, but to me it sounds like it's the closest thing to sentient you can get without being sentient. And to do so, I think you would need a mechanism like the mirror world. I think the only way that the wheel could accommodate for the type of individuality that we see in the Wheel of Time would be if it had some mechanism by which it could compensate for, you know, drastic changes made by, you know, the threads. So to me, that's why I've always, that's why it's a compelling theory that it's a mechanism, and it's always been kind of built into the wheel for that purpose. Kind of like the creator made for it to be that way, so he wouldn't have to be actively involved. In essence, something that could know with almost a certainty, maybe, that the Creator could know as to what the future and the past and the present were.
You know, I can't really get a handle on this thought, but it's just tickling around. I'm going to throw it out there because maybe you can make something more out of it than I'm able to do. As I said, I keep thinking that part of the key to defeating the Dark One might lie in Teleron-Riad or some of these alternate worlds or dimensions that we see. And I keep going back to what Herod Fell said about, building, bringing order from chaos. You have to tear down and clear the rubble before you can build and so forth. And it seems like it was certainly the most, plastic reality that we know of and malleable world set mindset that we know of is Teleron-Riad. And if there's ever a place, if you can learn to manipulate it properly, maybe with help from some of the other powerful channelers, perhaps even Egwene, who's a dreamer. I mean, she could certainly link with him using Kalendor and another powerful channeler and possibly be able to manipulate Teleron-Riad to give Rand powers, far beyond even those of mortal dragon reborns, I don't know. This is sort of a new theory in my head, and it's just sort of rattling around, so apologies if it sounds kind of stupid and unfinished, because I'm just not sure where I'm going with it yet.
Well, you could run along those lines that Mirin, or how do you pronounce Lanfear's Age of Legends name, that she...
Oh, Mirin or Myron. I don't know which it is.
Does it say when she becomes a master of Teleron-Riad? Is it after she becomes a servant of the Dark One, or is it before? I'm not sure if it's ever clear.
I don't know. I don't remember it being mentioned. But
it does make you wonder, was Teleron-Riad, somehow key in the discovery of this place?
Oh.
So you could probably, from a theory standpoint, run along the lines, you could connect Lanfear to Teleron-Riad, and then you could attempt to make some connection between the discovery of the prison through the knowledge of Teleron-Riad and these other worlds. You could probably, I'm just trying to throw out some ideas of ways you could attempt to make that theory. I wouldn't mind it if somehow Teleron-Riad came into play for the last battle. It would almost be nice that it wasn't just put it this way, we've seen a lot of battles between Rand and Ishmael, and they don't seem to happen in the real world, especially the first one, right, or the first two. The first one seems to happen in some kind of part of Teleron-Riad. The second one happens in the sky in some kind of very pattern-level event way where it's not quite clear exactly where they're fighting. So,
mm-hmm.
So it does make, I could see you kind of taking those two battles and somehow trying to bring them back around that Teleron-Riad or the whole concept of, what Teleron-Riad is and how it connects everything, that somehow would be vital to the last battle. Good luck. I think it's a good one.
Yeah.
I think it's a fun one. To me, it sounds like you could have a lot of fun trying to connect the pieces that way.
Yeah, and you mentioned another scene that sort of, tickles in with that, too, the scene where they're, the heroes of the Horn are riding down into Falna.
Sure.
There's a congruence there between Teleron-Riad and the real world. People in the real world can see what's going on, but it isn't really the real world. That there's something unworldly about the whole situation.
Well, that's an excellent. I think you bring up.
And if you remember, even Birgitta was able to ride across the water, and she was actually in this world. That I thought that was kind of weird. And so there was something going on there, and that's I guess why I keep thinking that if somebody were powerful enough and a serious enough master of molding reality in Teleron-Riad, they might actually be able to bend the real world to match Teleron-Riad if that's even possible. But I don't know. Like I said, I might be way off base with that. But it's fun to play with.
Just as something else you could add in there, yeah, I think adding the Horn of Valir in there and adding in the point that, as far as we know, things can't come out of Teleron-Riad and affect the real world like that. But
mm-hmm. But
there's obviously cases where there's obviously exceptions to those rules. And whether or not you call the Horn of Valir a Teron Greal, or if you call it some tool of the wheel or whatever you want to call it, but it somehow was able to mix Teleronriad with the real world and enable inhabitants of Teleronriad to come down and affect the real world. So, again, there's a lot to play with, and he mixes it so well that it's so, I mean, to me at least, it's a lot of fun the way that he has rules that he sticks by, but then he always kind of brings in, like, but there are people out there that have figured out ways to take the power of one world and affect the other world in ways that were not supposed to be possible. You know, I think...
Go ahead, sorry.
I was going to say, Brigida, when she came out, I think everyone was like, wait a second, this breaks all the rules. You know,
yeah.
You can't do this. And then Elaine bonding, you know, and the bonding somehow making it, you know, keeping her alive in this world, you know, she's an aberration. You know, she's something that should not be. And so in that same way, you know, you might be able to kind of push a theory that way, certainly.
Well, and what is the difference between the heroes being called by the horn and being out of Teleronriad and in the real world? They didn't fade. They didn't have the weakness or whatever. And, you know, Brigida being ripped away, well, she was just removed from Teleronriad. What was the difference? I mean, what does the horn do to the heroes so that they are not weak and nearly dead? You know, they're all exiting Teleronriad into the real world and then presumably able to, at some point in time, at least for the heroes, go back. It's a different, there's something going on there, and I'm just wondering what the key to that is. I mean, maybe that's the missing object of the power that the girls found in the White Tower that would help Rand win the last battle, or defeat the Dark One, I guess is how they put it, that they, you know, moved on from because they knew they could never get it out of the tower. Maybe it's something that allows, you know, a person to more fully manipulate the differences between the real world and Teleronriad and maybe even some of the mirror worlds and stuff. That would certainly be, you know, beyond powerful, and they probably would be sitting in the White Tower because nobody would have a clue how to run that. How would they?
Possibly the Horn of Valyr is going to be instrumental in that. I mean, I think there's... I think there's a possibility that the Horn of Valyr, you know, is less important from a hero's standpoint and more important from being necessary to do whatever it is Rand needs to do to fix the boar. So you're going to start getting, see, like 3 years from now and be like, I had this awesome theory that I'm going to steal this one from you, you know.
Well, I guess, let's see. I had another...
I have another topic if you want to jump on it. I don't know if
Spencer
had some. I said I have another topic if you want to read along this same line.
Yeah, go ahead. Because
yes,
let's go. I'm still sort of dithering around about all the other things that you throw in front of my brain.
Well, so...
Ow.
the skimming space is a lot of fun, right? So we sometimes, on Theoryland, we call these things... Teleronriad, and then we call it Teleronriad proper. We wanted a name just to refer to all these other places that weren't a part of the real world. You know, when we say, instead of every single place having a, we wanted some generic name, but we always thought of the skimming space. We know it's not Teleronriad, but it's an unseen place. And as we talk about it, it's a void. And what we like to do, there's a theory that we had a while back that we played around with, and I still think it's pretty solid, which is that the skimming space is the same space that was used by the male channelers to create the ways.
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense to me.
Yeah,
because
that makes a lot of sense.
The ways have got to be related to that in one sense. But then, that was the other thing I was going to bring in about the mirror worlds being a construct, because it reminds me an awful lot of, you know, the growing of the wave, you know.
Yeah, well, I think if I'm, maybe I'm mistaken here, I thought that, yeah, I'm pretty sure the study, I wish I could find the quote as I'm sitting here.
The waves were created by those who had studied, you know, the mirror worlds, yeah.
Right, and so they, understanding how to make this construct or this world or this traveling space, you know, inside of, because from all intents and purposes, if you look at it, it's described much like the skimming space is from a void perspective. It's just it has hard-coded pathways that obviously you would need to be a channeler to find if you were skimming. But these places, you know, opening a doorway, it just seems like it's an actively open doorway on both sides that you can open up with Terangreal. But there are hard-coded pathways through this void, and that's why you can save some time, but you can't, you know, it's not better than traveling, but it's better than walking there on its own. And it has the same kind of properties that skimming does. And that's why we connected the two. I don't think it's ever been said straight out, but that's to us, that's kind of been a prevalent theory around Theoryland for a while, is that they're both related.
But how is it then that the before the ways became dark, and we don't know, I started to say the taint took it over. We will actually know that it's the taint, but maybe it is. I don't know. But before the ways became dark, it was mentioned that you could ride through the ways in full sunlight with grass and trees and even fruit, you know, right. Along the way. And that's no more. That seems a little bit more elaborate than the skimming space, you know, which is basically a void except for whatever platform the person creates to skim on.
Well, it wouldn't be too hard to create a terrarium inside of the void and then just have the Talisman of Growing that adds wings onto the terrarium that connect those different way gates into the system.
It's miles and miles of stuff that make a terrarium, huh?
And miles to go before I sleep.
Well, that too.
Anyway.
No, I think that's exactly right. I mean, it was a constructed space. So as far as I recall, I thought it was, maybe I'm making this up, but I thought that it was artificial light. I believe they called it artificial light. I don't believe there's any actual sun. Well, I mean, it's very clear, right? Once they were corrupted, the light went away. So that there wasn't an actual sun providing light to this place. It was an artificial place that once corrupted lost all of these things that were, you know, that had been running by, you know, by nature of the Seidin or however it was created to kind of be self-sustaining. That system broke down because the black wind is not the blackness of the place. The darkness of the place seems to be just, you know, that was its normal habitat. That's how it was previous to them adding light. Like it says, they gave it light and they gave it grass because it didn't have those things naturally. So when I look at that as comparison to the void, you know, take away what the channelers added to the place to make it more hospitable and you get something more akin to the void. More akin to the skimming space itself. But yeah, I don't think it's actually been said either way, but it's fun to kind of connect those two as part of, well, then it's fun to ask, does the skimming space also have, is Telaranriad also part of the skimming space? Is there a Telaranriad in the skimming space? Because
I don't know.
We see Ran chased by Ishmael in a dream in a place that sounds suspiciously like the ways. I believe it's in Eye of the World, and I'm not sure exactly where, but he talks about running, he's on these platforms, and he's running up and down them, and it's dark, but it's during his dreams. So, again, is there a connection, you know, we see the Forsaken meet in kind of this space in Telaranriad that often is described much like the Void, but is it the Telaranriad version of the Void? So, obviously, there's not the danger that exists in the actual Void itself. You know, and obviously the Black Wind would not be in the Telaranriad version. But we know Telaranriad is the only constant across all places, all worlds. And the question is the Void, does it also count for the Void, for the skimming space? So
I don't know. The skimming space kind of seems to me very reminiscent of the vacuoles that we saw Mog Hedain trapped in right before she gets the Korsuva.
No, but time runs very much differently in the vacuoles than it does in the skimming space. They never mention that time is distorted during the skimming space. And also the vacuoles were like little aberrations. They would actually break off and float away, and anything that was in them was lost forever. So I'm not sure. It may be related, but I don't think it's quite the same as the skimming space. I actually think that the skimming space is extremely underrated as an evidence disposal system. I was always kind of shocked that Halima bothered to drag the bodies of the two, Egwene's two other maids through the snow and try to conceal herself from all the arm, you know, the soldiers of the army as she, you know, disposes of the body. Why don't you just open up a little gateway and dump it off into the void? It's gone.
That's a good point. I like that thought. What I think happens is, I think with a world so large that maybe the thought didn't, I don't know, maybe the time that he was doing away with the bodies, he didn't consider that as an option.
Wasn't that how Egwene got rid of Baron's body? Didn't she open a gateway and...
No, I thought she had somebody take Baron's body and bury it, didn't she, or something?
She had one of the Aes Sedai, one of the moles, take care of the body.
Yeah.
I just read this, well, not just, but I read it recently, so Medani, however you want to, pronounce her name.
Oh, here it is right here.
Because they channel a little bit, so they'll look in on them as to why they're channeling, and then she teaches her traveling, and I thought she had her take her away that way.
Yeah, she has Mediani take Varen's body away and take Varen's body and travel to remove it. And then we don't ever know what she did with it, which is sad. I'd like to know.
I agree with you. I agree. The skimming space makes an excellent. I like that. An excellent disposal, evidence disposal space. That's a good
idea. It is.
Well, it's the first thought that occurred to my mind when I heard about her carting this body off. I thought, what? That's a lot of work for a Forsaken to go through. You wouldn't even need to open a very big one.
Over the side. And you wouldn't have to create the platform on the other side either.
Just open it up and... Or you could create
my
platform.
Question.
You could create the platform, go in a little way, toss the body and come right back. You know.
Yeah.
I guess I have a criminal mind here.
Here's my question. I'm thinking back to Fires of Heaven when Rand scams the large contingency of Aiel warriors to Camelin.
Oh, yeah.
Why doesn't he put a rope around the barge?
I don't know. It actually wasn't a barge.
A large railing around the disc, maybe?
It was a bunch of paving stones, like the square that he was in. He made just more paving stones, and then he put them way farther out, and then he realized that they were too soft at the edges because he'd gone too far and brought them back in. So I think that's why he didn't think about putting a railing, because it was just like the square. It was just paving stones.
Yeah.
I mean, Egwene had a barge. Egwene had a barge with railings and even a little seat.
Yeah. Make a ship. You're sailing through open blackness. Make a ship. He's been on the on ships before. They're hard things to fall out of.
I'm thinking he was more thinking.
Unless you jump.
I want to kill Robin right now. He was focused.
Yeah,
on
that's
the
true.
Fact that he'd lost a couple of people, I think he was less concerned that people were going to fall off the barge and more concerned of how long it would take him to get there. You know.
Yeah, he was sort of in OCD mode at that point, I think.
Right.
He had already gone crazy by this point. He wasn't completely off the deep end. I mean, he hadn't been captured and tortured by Galena yet, but he was still crazy.
Well, not only that, it gave him another great way to beat himself up because another maiden fell off the edge or something. It's like, okay, Rand.
What happened? Someone fell off the edge. Oh, crap. Well, too bad.
Oh, was it a guy? No, don't even ask.
Exactly.
And I could never understand that. Like, you know, barely a tear for all these men that are dying in various horrible fashions and kind of beat himself up through all of eternity for a girl gets killed, you know. Okay.
Well, hopefully not anymore, if I may make a mild Towers of Midnight spoiler and point you to the first chapter.
I won't say anything. I've read it.
So am I. I like it.
By the way, here's a funny question that a lot of people maybe a lot of people don't, you know, like to just read through random interview quotes. It was asked by one Judy Girardelli back in 1994. Her question was, theoretically, if someone had sex in Teleron Riad, could they be pregnant in the real world? And Robert Jordan's answer was, read and find out.
Yeah, I know. Well, that's been one of our theories.
He said, I like the dirty questions. You notice it's always the women who ask the dirty questions, never the men.
Well, we postulated before that was probably the only way we could think of that Avienda was going to get to have these babies in any kind of reasonable time, is to become impregnated in Teleron Riyadh and then have a little bit of time distortion going on. I mean, well, let's face it. Okay, Elaine's already pregnant, but Javi's not, and unless they do some sort of a Star Trek thing where the weird thing about these kids is they pop out and grow, you know, like 2 years for every hour. You know, we're really running out of time. She hasn't died 9 months, probably.
Right. I mean, I'd be surprised if we see them. I mean, it's one of those things that we'll be able to make a series about, maybe. But I mean, I can't imagine we'll have any baby moments. You know, that would be, I don't know, that would seem like too much. I mean, I know we have Elaine's pregnancy here, but it would seem like too much if somehow the babies got involved. I don't know. That would really, change the whole. And knowing they're coming, different than them showing up, you know, Rand as trying to take out the Dark One as he has a child on his lap, just as a... It ruins it for me.
Yeah, Rand showing up to the last battle with his son sitting on his shoulders.
Or with the quadruple stroller, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think that's the book. That's the book Jordan's writing, but I hope not. I hope a memory of light isn't, you know, the first year of raising a baby for Rand. You know,
that'd be really weird. That is the last battle. Parenting, that's the last battle.
No. Oh, yeah.
I don't know. I have no children. I just have lots of...
As Jason said, you're just a baby yourself. Does your mother know you're out podcasting?
Oh, pshaw. For those of you not benefiting from the epic chats that go on via the podcast at dragonmount.com email, which gets forwarded to several people, I recently, as in yesterday at the time of this recording, had my 20th birthday. So,
congratulations.
So, yeah.
How long have you been reading the books?
Honestly, not very. 2005, I think. Whatever year it was that Knife of Dreams came out. Because I finished Crossroads of Twilight, and then I had like a couple of months to wait for Knife of Dreams to come out. So I haven't had the epic long wait time that most of the diehard fans have. So I'm pretty lucky.
Let's put it this way: we've been waiting for the finish of this series as long as you've been alive.
Yeah.
I think we're on 20 years now, aren't we, Matt?
Yeah. I'm somewhere in the 18 to 19 range. Like I feel like I picked it up somewhere. It's funny because I've talked to other people and I distinctly remember that The Eye of the World in hardback was sitting on, you know, kind of the newly released shelf, but that there were other books that were released too. So I can't remember if it was 91, 92, or if it was the end of 90. I know it was in that range. So I'm an 20-year kind of veteran there. So.
Yeah, I think it was probably 92 or 3. I think it was probably The Dragon Reborn came out in hardback when I first picked up Eye of the World, I think. I'm trying to remember now. It was either Dragon Reborn or might have been Shadow Rising. I don't know, but it's been a heck of a long time.
So my fun Teleron
Riyadh. A lot of good drama in those pages, as Matt would say.
Yes. Well, what's funny is when you wait for a book that long, you do have this much time to obsess and know way too much about things that don't really matter, let's be honest. But they're fun.
I know, it is kind of astonishing the amount of detail that we have committed to memory on these books.
Well,
anybody else? I mean, other than, you know, scholars of the Torah or serious Christian apologists, I think we've probably got almost everybody pretty beat.
Or the Tolkien fanatics, the Lord of the Rings fans that are still dissecting the four or five books that they have.
Yeah, we still brilliant, though. They don't have the sheer mass of data.
Yeah, we at least have 14 plus a prequel plus a big white book and an encyclopedia that's coming. So we got the data, and we're happy and proud about it because we get some of our heads full.
Well, I mean, it's just sad because there's absolutely no money in this information.
I know.
They're not going to have me show up at some conference, and I mean, I guess JordanCon, but at no other conference will I ever show up and share this information anywhere. So
I know.
You go for your doctorate, and your graduating thesis is a dissection of the Wheel of Time quantum mechanics.
Well, Andrew's actually trying to bring that into his historical doctorate, somehow bring the Wheel of Time into there. Don't get me started on quantum mechanics. I know Robert Jordan was a physicist, so I know he probably gave a lot of thought to some of the, you know, physics behind some of these things, and that's why sometimes I kind of go off the deep end, and I think I probably leave a lot of the listeners wondering, what the heck is she talking about? Because I'm sure that there's some really tricksy things coming up that will probably make a lot of sense from a quantum point of view. Oh wait, and I almost forgot. I have to do my one crossover here. We got the Lord of the Rings a little bit here, but the whole mirror world and the parallel universes thing sort of reminds me of that scene in Stargate SG-1 where they had the quantum mirror. And we were talking about how to get back to your own timeline, and that was the problem that they had. You could jump through the thing, but it was really hard to tell whether you were jumping back into the right one or something a little similar or maybe not at all similar. You know, that was kind of cool.
You know, one of my favorite lines, oh, you're still a captain. Wrong one.
Yeah.
So my still ongoing theory that I've had for, like, I think maybe 10 or 12 years, it's still alive, and I still think there's a possibility, is that Lanfear's end game is to somehow, or has always been ever since she got back to this, ever since she was locked up for 3,000 years and realized that working for the Dark One really sucked, that her end game was to defeat the Dark One and then rule the world.
Well, she said as much.
Using Telerodriad.
Yeah,
I really believe she wants to steal away. I still think she is so my theory is that she is the key, that in the end, she will play the key role in helping Rand figure out how to seal away the Dark One.
But then what will Oliva do?
Oh, Olivia? She'll play some role in actually helping him, but the information as to how it comes about will be information gained from Lanfear. Because she's the only one, as far as we know, that's still living, that was there when the Boar was originally made. And she was obviously leading that team. So she's probably the only one of the Forsaken that has any idea how it was created and that has thought through how she could either reverse the process or, you know, correct what she did, and that somehow she will come to play a part in the end. That's been my hope since about 12 years ago. I've always loved Lanfear, and then she became Syndane. And that can't be a spoiler. I guess it hasn't, like, been said, obviously, in the book, so it's only speculation on my part, but she's obviously Syndane.
Oh, yeah, I think pretty much guaranteed on that one.
Yeah, it's obvious.
Yeah.
It hasn't been said, so it's not a spoiler.
Really? You never actually said straight out that Syndane and Lanfear were the same, did he?
No, Jordan never did, Brandon.
Really?
And the books have not, but it's pretty obvious.
I don't know why I always thought that Jordan had, but what do I know? I maybe it's just wishful thinking. I thought he really had said that. Never mind.
But it's one of those, like, it seems very obvious. But my hope to redeem her as a character, because she's been lost for however many books in reality. I mean, coming back as Syndane, she was kind of a waste of a character. But I feel like the harmony in the entire books, that this all began, in essence, the story we have, is not because of Luthien. The story we have is because of Lanfear and what she did and guided her team to do. That's why we have this story. And so the idea that she's still in play makes me feel like, and has for a long time, that she has to come back into play. If she didn't, I mean, maybe she doesn't, but that's I still have hope, because as far as I know, she's still alive. So my hope,
wow,
that was in Robert Jordan's mind, that she would still play a part. So
she can have her redemption. Wouldn't it be cool if somehow Lanfear wasn't killed right away when she went through the doorway to Rungo with Moraine, and that there was some interaction between them in the land of the Ulthan and the Elfin, and that perhaps they came to some sort of an accord or a compact between them to help Luthien and Rand defeat the Dark One. Wouldn't that be bizarre?
Yeah, that'd be interesting. But I have to say, just really quick, Matt, I think it's amazing how you just distilled the essence of Wheel of Time down to Star Wars.
You're welcome.
Luke,
I mean,
your father.
you start out with Anakin or Merrin, who's a pretty cool character, or Anakin and Lanfear, and then you get whiny Anakin and Sintane, and then you get and then you get Darth Vader and the whole turnaround there.
Then you get Uncle Fest. Anakin.
I don't know. I think whiny Anakin was Lanfear pining for Luke Theron back in the day. You know, I think that
But then you had to do New Hope and Emperor Strikes Back. Darth Vader have to be compared to Sindane, and Sindane isn't that cool.
No, so what you do is here's my progression here. You have Mirren, right, as little boy.
Cool Anakin.
Little Annie.
Then she's studying because she wants to know more about her powers, and she bores the hole, and she becomes kind of like whiny Anakin. I didn't really mean to do what I just did. It's not
emo
my fault.
Anakin, as I like to call
right.
him.
And then by the end of the Age of Legends, by the end of the war, before she's sealed away, she's like Darth Vader. She's like, you know, she's everyone's worst nightmare. She's going in and controlling people's minds and doing terrible things to them. And then we get 3,000 years later, or, you know, or Episode 4, right? And where you have Rand come in, and all of a sudden Lanfear comes back. And what is Lanfear doing? Lanfear's trying to convince Rand she's really a good person, and together they could rule the world. He just needs to follow her. Right. And that happens over, you know, a series of those two episodes. And in Episode 5, you have the fact that they kind of split up because, well, I guess she'd be really cool if she kind of cut off, you know, if she was the one responsible for Rand losing his arm. That would have been.
Yeah, it'd be perfect. But
yeah, then it
was not so.
But it was
sadly
close.
Not so.
Well, you tried. It was very close.
And Lanfear has sort of morphed from Anakin into Obi-Wan. You know?
Creepy.
As silly as that comparison is, I'm still hoping it's true.
Yeah. So and now, Virginia, just wait. We're going to get someone who's upset at us for spoiling Star Wars.
Oh, God. Yes. Yes. He really did look like Uncle Fester at the end.
But it has surprised me that the Forsaken haven't, like... Well, anyways, I think that was Lanfear's, her Teleronriad plan. You know, the ruling the world thing was always the one she told Rand. The idea that she would do so through Teleronriad, I think, was in the back of her mind, that she could use it to stay alive. She could use it to control many worlds, and... You know, she knows how to use that place, and you know, again, like you said, maybe Lanfear knows. Maybe that can go into your theory, Virginia, which is Lanfear knows some way to manipulate Teleronriad against the Dark One.
Yeah, and here's another question. I mean, we know that you can channel in Teleronriad. Can you? Presumably, you can use Angreal and Sangreal and Tarangreal. What happens if you use something as powerful as the Chodan Kahl or some of these unknown Sangreal that we're told about? My favorite is the missing one that Lanfear, actually, now that we're talking about Lanfear, mentions in Fires of Heaven when they're in the Stone of Tyr, and she's having her little discourse with Rand. He's run off and left Kalendor up in his room, and she says, there are two Sangreal more powerful than Kalendor for men that I know of. One I know still exists, which we presume is the Chodan Kahl. And then she, or Robert Jordan, I should say, just kind of goes right on, and it's never mentioned again. But is that Tarangreal that is for men that is more powerful than Kalendor that still exists? Maybe. And what happens if you use something like that in Teleronriad? I mean, what would happen if you were, maybe it wouldn't even matter, what would happen if you were, you open a gateway to Telaran Mi'ad, you're standing in Telaran Mi'ad, and you channel at the real world from Telaran Mi'ad. Does that make a difference? Probably not, but
I don't know.
I think about weird things like this. I have like no life whatsoever, so I actually spend time worrying about this stuff.
No, that's a good question. I think it's a reasonable question. I don't know. I haven't thought about channeling from Telaran Mi'ad into the outside world, and if it would be any different than...
Well, we know they destroyed, you know, tons of the palace with Balefire, and it was all fine when they came back to the real world. So we know that even Balefire doesn't affect the real world from Telaran Mi'ad. But I'm just wondering if there's something that's powerful enough that might. I just keep coming back to that as maybe the key, and I guess I'm maybe placing too much weight on Varen's little comment that Rand thinks he knows how the last battle is going to be fought, but he has no idea.
I'll be honest.
Clearly, Varen has some idea because she was in the Dark Aja, so she must be privy to some plans, or must have been, I should say.
You can never
maybe
put
that's,
weight on Telaran Mi'ad, I'll be honest.
Sorry?
I said you can never put too much weight on anything about Telaran Mi'ad. I think it's something that is used so often that I would not be surprised if it came into play somehow in the end. I mean, there's so much going on there that has gone on there in the series. It's really a part of the books that, you know, maybe is misunderstood a little bit more or maybe isn't discussed as much, but there's so many things we haven't even talked about in this discussion. And from a dream perspective, Egwene being able to see all the dreams, dream walkers, that's one of the ones I wanted to talk about tonight, and I don't have a ton of more time, but we don't see the Aiel wise ones describe anything like the dream walking that they describe when it comes to sending letters to Tyr. You know, like we knew you'd show up there. We sent a letter because we knew it was.
Yeah.
We weren't sure if you were going to come here, but we thought you would. And there were all these branching off decisions of things that might happen. They never have a reason to tell the reader any other information that they've been gaining when it comes to dream walking. So it really makes you wonder, have they been dreamwalking and are decisions that they're making right now based on things that they've seen as they've been dreamwalking? We just don't know about them as readers because they're not being asked or they have no reason to tell anyone what it is, but we know they have that capability. And we haven't really seen Egwene dreamwalk in that way, have we?
She's had a couple of scenarios, the one where she saw Gawain riding up to her and then possibly going down one path or the other, and that she knew that one path would result in his death and the other path would result in something else, but she wasn't sure which.
Yeah, there's that one. Yeah, it's not very specific. What the Aiel wise ones are talking about is very, I mean, detailed information. You know,
obviously just better at it than she was at that point in time. And
but we never see them train her on that part of it.
No.
They don't train her to be a dream walker in reality. They to walk the dream world, but not to use it to understand what's happening. And I don't know if that's on purpose. I don't know if maybe they didn't want to teach her that. Maybe they just wanted to teach her up to the point. Maybe they were going to and she left. Maybe that was the issue. But there's lots of pieces of Telaran Mi'ad we haven't discussed in that sense.
Well, maybe it's just something that comes with more experience, and they know that she'll develop that ability as she goes on. Not something they can teach her. She just has to get better, you know.
Yeah, well, it makes me wonder, do they do it together? Do the Aiel wise ones, they all seem to know all these things. Is it because there were two of them that were, because I know all of them are not.
Yeah, they meet together. They meet together in Telaran Mi'ad.
Having those experiences, what are they doing? We see Egwene, and she can see all the dreams of all the people, and that's kind of a cool capability. But what are the Aiel wise ones doing that they're able to read the dream in such a way that they were able to kind of gather that much information? Nothing much is ever said about it after that point.
No, I know. I just wonder if it wasn't something that Robert Jordan originally decided to do with them and then realize that it gave them too much power. I mean, that's the problem when you have characters like this in books like this. It's really easy to just hand them too much power. And then they they actually become detrimental to the plot line in a lot of ways. You know, you see it in comics all the time. You know, you get the Silver Age, you get this, and the characters change and evolve throughout the different iterations of it because sometimes they just get too much. So they can do too many things or too well or whatever, so they end up rewriting them so that they're, you know, less or more or whatever. But I'm going to branch off from that because I know you said you don't have too much more time. There are two other things that I want to touch on briefly, if you will, and one is The Wolf Dream, which obviously has almost certainly, you know, the equivalence with Total Unread, but it's probably the same. And the second is Perrin sees occasionally visions like windows in The Wolf Dream that apparently are predictive, something like Egwene does. And it seems to me that somebody else saw something similar to that, but I can't remember who it is. I just wonder.
Yeah, it's an interesting question whether or not Perrin can be considered a dream walker, and if that's kind of inherent to, if you consider what Egwene naturally is able to enter, you know, the Teleron Riad in the same way that Perrin is naturally able to enter Teleron Riad, which he refers to as the wolf dream. It's interesting to think that is he a dreamer? Are all wolves or all humans that are, you know, that are able to dream themselves into Teleron Riad, are they inherently dreamers too?
Mm-hmm.
Good question. I don't think the question has ever been asked in those terms that I've read. But you're right. Perrin has very similar, you know, those windows he sees are very similar to what we see Egwene experience also. And it does make you wonder, could Perrin ever, if he was taught, could Perrin learn to enter the gap of infinity, is what we call it. I don't know what else to call it. The place with all the dreams.
The space between the worlds, yeah, okay.
Yeah,
I've never heard it called the gap of infinity. I like that. That's great.
Well, Jordan kind of described it. It's funny. We used this term with him one time because it's one of those things. When you want to talk about this, you want to come up with some acronym, or we call it the GOI, you know, you want to come up with a way to quickly say it and move on, and they have to be like the place where all the dreams that Egwene sees when she goes.
Yeah.
So in one of his descriptions, he calls it a gap. He calls it like where she sees infinity. It's a gap. He uses infinity and gap together in like four or five words. And I think it was myself or somebody else brought up gap of infinity and we all ran with it.
Cool.
But the concept of this place, it seems like it's a place that dreamers can go. And so the question I have is if Perrin is demonstrating dreamer-like talents in Teleron Riad, you know, could he also be taught to go into this place? Could he also be taught to go into the gap of infinity and see the dreams of other people and eventually be taught to then touch the dreams of other people? Because it seems to me like he's just not taught, right? He hasn't learned much, you know.
Well, clearly the wolves have this ability to enter Teleron Riad. They go to Teleron Riad when they die. There apparently is some crossover between their normal sleeping, you know, state and Teleron Riad, maybe even the real world in Teleron Riad, but probably the wolves are fatalistic enough they don't really care about interpreting the future.
Does Hopper ever...
It is what it is.
Hopper show up in his dreams? Wait, so we've all read the... Well, okay, so first, there's a prologue spoiler that I was about to bring up. We've already read the prologue, correct?
I do,
no.
Yeah.
No.
Then stop your ears up.
Okay, I won't say this then. Okay, this thing has nothing to do with the prologue that I'm about to talk about. So have we ever seen Hopper in one of Perrin's dreams? Where Perrin just had a relatively normal dream, but he sees Hopper there? I can't remember if we ever had.
I think he's had nightmares where... the time when he almost ripped out Hopper's throat, I think he's had nightmares about that before recurring. But I'm not sure that we've ever actually seen Hopper dreamwalk like we've seen Egwene and the other Aiel dreamwalkers do.
Okay.
I know Hopper has appeared in dreams that he had where he ended up in the strange room that would change with the striated clouds and usually presumably a Shamael eventually there. I know he had a dream where he was in Mr. Salvier's kitchen and Hopper was there, and then I think the Shamael destroyed Hopper, actually. I think he incinerated him or something.
I get a feeling like from what we've seen.
But I don't know if that was a real dream, you know,
well,
if any dream
like,
could be
like
called. You know?
In that space between your dream and when the dream bubble travels up until it touches Teleron Riyadh and travels, you know, there's that gap. It seems to me like dreamers like Egwene, where her dreams kind of have a reality aspect like Teleron Riyadh, but she's not in Teleron Riyadh, but her dreams are kind of like, it seems to me like, dreamer or people that know Teleron Riyadh can kind of, in essence, I don't know what you call it, like a mid, I don't know, somewhere in between like Teleron Riyadh and their own dream, right? I mean, like that,
yeah.
where Rand is taken, I don't believe he's actually, well, as far as we know, right, he can't, Teleron Riyadh doesn't go, like you can't go, with Teleron Riyadh, you can't go into the Blight or into Shallow Gull. But the place that he ends up with Ishmael seems pretty, you know, it seems like something other than his dream, right? It's like a little bit more real than a normal dream is, but it doesn't, it's not Teleron Riyadh. So it's like, seems like there's a mix there, and it seems to me like dreamers or people that know how to manipulate it can kind of, like there's stuff we don't really know, right, that they can do with Teleron Riyadh that it can't just be quantified like, oh, they were in the dream world. No, they were just having a dream. Dreamers seem to kind of, like there's some gray space there between the two where there's a lot of, you know, possibilities for what you can do in a dream. So,
well, like the Forsaken, when they have some of their meetings, you know, one of them recreated the, what was it, the Anseline Gardens or whatever for a setting. Another one, you know, we referred to Lanfear creating the place that looked like the Ways with all the mirrors and chairs and thrones and things like that. But apparently
like,
they can just create any sort of space that they want to in Teleron Riyadh, at least. But I don't know if that's in between. That's not in between the worlds.
Well, that's the question is, you know, because Rand is still in the dream. Is he fully in Teleron Riyadh? Is he partially in Teleron? You know, is he outside of his dream? Has Ishmael come into his dream and then created something within his dream? You know, it's unclear because it doesn't, everything we see happen in those circumstances doesn't feel like Teleron Riyadh, like strictly Teleron Riyadh. It feels like something, maybe like you said, they've manipulated the dream world in some way and somehow connected it to a dream itself and they've made something out of it. I don't know, it's never quite clear, but it does make me wonder, bringing up Perrin and the Wolf Dream, you know, can Perrin be considered, I guess he can be considered a wolf dreamer, you know? You know, and what type of capabilities does that come with? Obviously, he can enter Teleron Riyadh naturally without any, you know, and that does speak to being a dreamer-type talent. Obviously, it's connected to the wolf, but it makes me wonder what capabilities he has compared to what...
Yeah, if he could somehow be trained.
Right.
But going back to the Ishmael dreams, they have one thing in common with Teleron Riyadh, which is why I think that they're a construct that are manipulated by the Forsaken in Teleron Riyadh just to be what they want it to be, because there's that one scene where Rand touches the figurine that has the sword and it pricks him, and he has the prick in his hand when he comes out, when he wakes up, just like any wound that you would receive in Teleron Riyadh.
Yeah, no, that's a good point.
And then I think Perrin also had a burn mark on his chest. I think that actually might have been Rand that did it to him when he was, he dreamed himself into the clearing where Rand was, I guess it was in Dragon Reborn when he was running from Moraine. And he thinks that Perrin is one of the many people that the Dark One has sent against him to look like his friends and family, but try to kill him. And so he shoots a little fireball toward Perrin and he realize, oh my God, I almost killed him. And then Perrin has a little burn on his chest and he asks Moraine to heal it. And she says, no, I'm going to leave it there as a reminder, you know.
Oh, Moraine.
Well, she'll be glad if she comes back. I hope everything works out the way I hope on that.
We all hope that everything works out on that.
What if she comes back with some abilities to manipulate Teleron Riad and the other unseen worlds? I mean, there's potentially a lot of pretty arcane knowledge to be had from the Finns.
Yeah, it's going to be a fun, whatever it is, Talos Midnight's going to be fun.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I'd love for there to be more. Anyways, you know, obviously you can tell that I enjoy the topic, so anytime there's Teleron Riad related information, you know, I enjoy it, which is one of the reasons why I really enjoy some of the earlier books. We don't get as much of it later on in some of the transition books, which is disappointing because it's such, and that's what I mean, is Lanfear leaves, and we don't see it as much. And obviously we see some of it with Mokhedian and such.
But. Yeah. I thought it was always funny that they said that Lanfear always claimed Teleron Riad as her own, but that Mokhedian was nearly or even more skilled in the World of Dreams than Lanfear was.
Yeah, I think Lanfear had bigger plans, and Mokhedian figured out how to do more stuff, you know?
Yeah.
I wouldn't necessarily, if I had them going against each other, necessarily pick Mokhedian, because strategically I think Lanfear would take her out. But
yeah, I think he's stronger.
I think Mokhedian...
And smarter.
Yeah, I think Mokhedian could probably get away. I think she has better ways to run away, you know?
Lanfear kind of comes across as the $6 million woman, stronger, faster, smarter, you know.
but yeah,
she will kill you and eat you for breakfast.
Well, I apologize. I think I have to take off. My wife has school work to do, and she has until midnight to get it done. And
uh-oh.
I need to help put the rest of my kids down to bed. So I apologize for not being able to stay longer and talk about it. But what's fun is, to me, it's an open-ended topic, and hopefully the listeners have lots of questions, and they come on your boards and start asking them. I love talking about the topic. So
that would be great. Well, you've got an
open-ended
topic.
Yeah, we might even get the Tamerlan of Theoryland to come post to the Dragonmount boards, I guess, if we get some good discussion going on this episode.
I'd love to. I know. I'd love to. It's funny, if you come to Theoryland, the people will say, you know, I haven't seen you a lot of discussions, and it's funny because I only get into very specific discussions. This is one of them. If you bring up Mirror World, I'll find you. You know, or if you bring up Teleron Riad or Lanfear or Varin, you know, stuff like that. You know, I get into. I don't really care about White Tower politics. It's not. I don't really keep track of it. But when it comes to Dreaming and Ruidian and IL Wise Ones and all those type of topics, I love them. So, yeah, hopefully...
Oh, yeah, that's another one we didn't even touch on, the mirror, the Iranian Ruidian stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, geez, there's so much around all of these topics. And hopefully this has kind of spurred people to think about it. And I hope I wasn't too boring talking about stuff.
Yeah. I wasn't bored anyway. Hopefully nobody else is.
I highly recommend going to the interview database and those two links I sent you. Maybe post those links with the discussion. There's just information that people have never read before, answers that Jordan gave about mirror worlds and parallel worlds and fins and souls and what you can do and what you can't do and questions he's answered about all the things that we've kind of gone to pains. It's been one of my goals from a question standpoint. I like expanding the world or understanding the rules of the world. It's more fun for me to think about what's possible if I have a better idea of what the rules are and the basis of how everything works together. Then it's more fun to try to figure things out. So that's always been a goal, is to just ask questions that really, not necessarily, you know, who killed who, but more, can you do this, or what are the differences between these two things? So we have more of a kind of a stronger basis on which to build theories and figure things out. So I highly recommend reading those.
I was skimming through them, and they're pretty good. I think I will post the links since you've given me permission to do so. Thank you.
Yeah, please
do. I'll put them on the... we should get the podcast page back up pretty soon. I'm still waiting for Jason to finish tweaking the RSS feed so they work. When they did the reboot of Dragonmount, the podcast stopped working. So we've been basically resorting to putting them on TalkShoe and tweeting it in there.
Nice. Well, hopefully when they edit through this one, there'll be a good hour and a half of good material for people to go through. And I look forward to the discussion of it. It's something I still kind of get excited about and enjoy even after this long of discussing the book. So thanks for...
Well, it's unquestionably one of the coolest parts of the Wheel of Time, and we really, really appreciate you bringing your expertise on it. You got me beat 9 ways from Sunday. I think you know a lot more about it than probably almost anybody except Robert Jordan and Brandon.
Well, it's less about it. Well, it's more just my obsessing over it. What's interesting is a guy at JordanCon, he brought up, we were talking about what Moradin does when he rips a hole in the pattern. And I have a theory. I won't break out the theory here. And it all came from something this guy said, and I had kind of really thought about it one way, and he posed a different idea. And because he posed a different idea, something else came up, and then it made me kind of come all the way back around and realize that maybe he and I were both wrong about what we were seeing, and maybe something else was going on. So that being said, I love hearing about the topic because as much as I think I might know about this stuff, you know, again, obviously I'm just a fan too, reading all this data that people have put out there and have put together my own theories on it. So I love hearing other people's theories because there's stuff that, you know, that I obviously don't know and hopefully things that maybe I'm thinking, but somebody else has figured a reason why they're wrong. And I'd love for some of these theories to be proven wrong because, again, it just helps further establish some of the rules stuff is based. You know, I'd love to know for sure that the inhabitants of other mirror worlds don't have souls, which I don't think they do. And unfortunately, Maria said that she didn't know when she answered Luckers on one of those. And that may not be an answer that we ever get, you know. But from everything I think Jordan's read, I don't think they do. But again, it's just a theory out there. So to me, it's kind of an open topic that can continue to be talked about for a long time, versus who killed who. I mean, those are fun topics to kind of discuss, but in the end, they're not as fulfilling. Although, again, I'll talk about Asmodian for however long we want to talk about him until we have a definitive final answer. It is still a fun mystery, also.
Yeah. Well, hopefully, it'll be just a matter of at this point in time, a matter of weeks before we find out. So.
I don't think.
Anyway.
I'm hoping we don't. That's my my hope. My hope is we don't find out.
Well, I guess I'll have to be happy with the crumbs that we're going to get. I was really expecting to see a resolution to Moraine in the Gathering Storm, and obviously that didn't work out. So at least now I'm pretty sure if it doesn't come in this book, I'm going to be fairly annoyed with the cover art and everything. That's going to be a real abrogation of the narrative debt there. But, I think it's pretty much a done deal. We're gonna see a resolution. I hope it'll be what I want, but there's no way to know, and I'm just gonna hope for the best. But won't be long.
Absolutely.
In the
only
meantime,
30 days. So
at this
again,
point, yay!
Thanks for having me.
Well, at this point, again, Matt, thanks again for joining us. We really appreciate everything that you do to make the fan community even more interesting, you know, by all of the theories and exciting things that you guys do. So.
And to find Matt's boards, the Theoryland boards, is obviously theoryland.com.
Yeah, come visit us, theoryland.com. We go out looking for more freaks like us, and when we find them, we take good care of them.
If you want to find the interview database that we've been kind of referencing throughout this, it's a wonderful post, a wonderful collection put together by Terez, who's one of the heroes of the Horn on Theoryland. And you can find that really easily by going to bit.ly/WOT interviews. That's WOT interviews.
Ooh, cool.
Excellent.
Love bit.ly.
Yeah, that's a fun repository of information.
Yeah, it's great. It is very great.
What's crazy to me is she's actually gone in and cataloged all of Brandon's obsessive tweeting this last summer. He was tweeting. All these people were tweeting him questions, and he was on a daily basis. And she has those in there, good information in a lot of those questions. I told him he was becoming his own Wattfac at one point.
Yeah. No, I love the work that she did. Therese, if you listen to this, or maybe Matt, you can pass this on, but I am so grateful for all the work she did during the Great Hunt to just keep everything organized, keep all the clues together, keep things so that we could find them. And even what you were doing, the failed answers, or the failed codes page that you put together also was great. And that you made the Great Hunt a whole lot of fun. I don't think I would have gotten involved if it were not for the organizational efforts of you and Therese and everyone else who helped out with that.
Yeah, Therese and I, and thanks to a user named Camel, he built the database that I used on the back end for that search engine. Yeah, Therese and I, we did a lot of collaboration on. I was talking to, I think it was Jen and Jason during the end of the hunt, and the comment was made, I can't remember if I made this comment or they made this comment, but Theoryland's the perfect place to do that kind of freaky fan stuff, which, I'll be honest, I was glad those 2 weeks ended when they did, because that was that was way too much work. I think my wife thought it was funny at first, and then a week into it, she's like, are you serious? You're updating that list for the fifth time today. You do some dishes,
yeah.
Or something, you know. So
yeah, but you did you and Therese and Jason and Jen, you did amazing. I especially love the triple cross there at the end.
That was
20 questions out of them. Yes,
that was a Dragon Mount led effort. Jen and Jason deserve all the credit. And what's funny about that is, I literally thought there was a quadruple cross involved there somewhere. I thought for sure that when they had come up with the first plan to trick Brandon, that between the two of them they had some other plan to somehow trick me and Brandon. So
they had me
paranoid, that's for sure.
That would be scary. I'll admit it here on the podcast that when I first saw the double cross, I was like, oh my gosh. I might have to disassociate myself from Dragon Mount now. I'm not sure I like these people anymore. But it all came out in the wash, and it was funny, and it was good, and it worked. It worked.
Well, it was funny. Well, I think part of it, I think Brandon, he told us that Jason and I had gotten on the phone with him and telling him that we had pulled this off after he'd given us the questions. And his comment was that he thought something like that was going on, but because the second list of 10 questions that I had sent him had 3 or 4 repetitive questions, he wasn't completely sure, so he just ran with giving us the so I had to – a lot of people got mad at me because I had repetitive questions. But that was part of the whole deception.
Yeah, they had to be there.
We had to make him believe. So we really only got 16 out of the 20, but 16 was better than 10. And in the end, it just kind of added to the – craziness and the fun part of it, and I think that's why Brandon went along with it, because in the end that was just fun.
In the end it was fun anyway, so what does it matter?
Well, in the end we needed his help, let's be honest. We did find, because of all those answers we got, we found the city. You know, and after we found the city we were pretty much
had no idea
until we got some other clues from him, and I think he realized that even if he gave us 20 questions to find out where this thing was, we weren't going to get close enough to, you know, to be able to do it without his help. So,
and then it wasn't there anyway, so.
Well, yeah, exactly. In the end, it wasn't. Well, thank you guys again for having me, and it's been fun. It's a discussion I have to talk about, and I hope it didn't bore your viewers too much. I realize it's not everyone's favorite topic, so.
Yeah, I like
hopefully
the favorite topics.
Hopefully it's more of a favorite topic now, and they'll have something to talk about. So I'll be around. I'll look for this thing being released, and I'll definitely stop by Dragon Mount, and I'd love to talk to people over there about it. So.
Great. Okay. Maybe we can get together.
Yep,
I don't know if there'll be time, but maybe we can get together and discuss the prologue and the chapter. Maybe at this point in time we should just wait until after the release and go for that.
Yeah, I'm free to come back anytime. I'd love to talk about Towers of Midnight.
Okay. Thanks again for joining us, and this is Virginia saying, may the light illumine you till we meet again.
Hey, Spencer, thanks for having me. Thanks for setting this up, and Virginia, and keep thinking on this, and we'll meet up on the boards.
And until next time, may you find water and shade.
The Fourth Age Podcast is brought to you by DragonMount.com. To contact us, visit our website, DragonMount.com/podcast.